Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. That bald guy is Jeff Fiegel. This bald guy is John Schmelk. With you at 201-939-4513. If you want to talk to these two bald guys that are wearing sweaters, talking about some
sweaty
NFL football. Exactly.
Sound very good.
No, it did not. We're going to have John Ledyard, who's live from the Senior Bowl. He covers the NFL draft for the Pylon, also covers the Steelers for Scout.com. He has been on the field in Mobile, Alabama the last couple of days watching practice, so he'll give us some insight on what he's seen from the draft prospects down there. Remember, folks, we're just trying to kind of get a feel for what the class is now. We're not trying to zero in on who the Giants going to pick in the 20s because that's impossible. We're starting to get into the groove a little bit, which is kind of where you are at this point with the Senior Bowl, and really practice more important at the Senior Bowl than the game itself, Jeff.
And I wondered, there's a lot of these games, you know, and I'm just wondering, is this the most important one, you think, the Senior Bowl? I think all the personnel from around the league are at these games.
Yes.
Are at this game, and you know, so it is important. And one thing I want to ask John is, you know, what's his take on guys that miss this that should be there, or guys that, you know, do they need to be there? Just some good questions that he can answer for me, at least, and we'll be able to ask some questions. John, I know you have a lot. So give us a little bit of an update on what's going on down there. And I won't ask any kicking questions or punting questions. I can promise you that.
And we are going to learn a little bit, as you guys learn, about this year's draft class and exactly where the strengths and weaknesses lie. You've heard a little bit, but we'll get into a little bit more detail, at least with the seniors, who you'll see, who we're seeing up close all week. Those practices, of course, are on NFL Network. But before we get to John in about 5 or 6 minutes, we are going to go through the remaining predictions from this season that Jeff and I like to tally every year. And we haven't gone through them yet,
We haven't really kind of we glance at them every once in a while, but we haven't dug into them.
I ripped them off the board. I'd say I got about 15 here, maybe give or take, that we tallied over the course of the off season and then of course into the regular season. I ripped all the draft ones out. I'm not talking about those because we touched on those after the draft. So, you ready to go?
And some of them have dates on them.
Some don't. Here we go. Stassen, Washington. Stas.
Okay.
He's an all-time, long-time caller. Top three wide receivers will combine for 3,250 yards. And let me tell you, for a while this year,
they were on pace.
They were on pace to do that. Through about the first 4 or 5 or 6 games, they were on pace to have all three guys go over 1,000 yards. Well, when all was said and done, I will do my quick math here. I wasn't lying that I wasn't keeping track of these, so I got to do it right now.
Plus, you know, when you think about those first 3 or 4 games, Odell Beckham wasn't, you know, he was just, you know, not on fire at that point in time. Remember Sterling Shepard started out the season with catching a lot of footballs with a lot of yards, and that's why we sat here and thought, okay, yeah, maybe this prediction could be right.
So in the regular season, Odell Beckham at 1,367, Sterling Shepard with 683. So they combined for
almost 2,000.
2,050 yards, excuse me, if you do that all together. And then Victor Cruz just had 586. So they combined for about 26 and change, give or take, which frankly is a pretty good number for your top three wide receivers, but it falls short of the 3,250 predicted by Stas.
Yeah, and I think Victor Cruz had a couple games, but he missed some games. And then also, that was 3,000 would have been a good number.
Here we go. Rudy, I don't have a date on this. Definitely the Super Bowl. That didn't come true. But he said 11 wins.
Okay.
NFC East Division Championship. No division championship.
So one out of three.
11 wins.
Yeah, that was a good call coming off of a 6-10 season. That's pretty bold.
I give credit for that.
Yep.
All right, now we got Carl on June 1st said Larry Donnell not on the 53-man roster. Now, he wasn't really playing much at the end of the year, but he did make the 53-man roster. We'll see if he can do that in 2015. All right. All the way back last January 22nd.
Almost a year ago to the day.
Correct. Jeff in Rhode Island, real good chance, in quotes, of winning the division, 10-6 record. Not bad.
All right. Well, they missed out on one win. And, you know, they had a chance to win the division later in the – remember? As long as the Cowboys were – to lose,
right?
But hey, to be able to say, hey, this team is going to go have 11 wins right after in January of a year ago, after a 6-10 season, a bold prediction in my mind, it worked.
Now we'll see if Will you boldly predict that I'll hit the camera lens at one point with one of these sheets of paper? Or no, I'm trying. I'm 0 for 3. All right. January 22nd of last year, same day, Andrew in Virginia Beach, Victor Cruz Comeback Player of the Year. Now, those awards have not been announced yet.
Be a little short.
But I think that's probably unlikely when the NFL has their honors awards the Saturday before the Super Bowl in about 10 days.
And who is going to be that Comeback Player of the Year?
Do you know who the nominees are?
No.
I don't. Let me look it up here.
Jordy Nelson.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
And let me tell you something. Comeback Player of the Year and Comeback Player of the Playoffs. My goodness. The guy goes
by
out
the
there
way,
and plays with broken ribs.
What a great job by Jordy Nelson to play with that flak jacket. Really unbelievable. Comeback players of these are the guys. It could be Le'Veon Bell. He had a rough year last year. He played really well this year. Andrew Luck, another guy. Tyrann Mathieu, he's a guy that obviously came back from an injury, and but then he got hurt again this year too, so that's not going to work out. I think this is a list from before the year. So I think Jordy Nelson probably is a pretty safe bet for comeback player
of
the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And Le'Veon Bell too. Le'Veon Bell's got a chance too because of what he did. Did you
absolutely
get it?
I did get it, yes. Very happy with myself. All right, Sean in California. Eli Apple, breakout year in 2017. I think he played pretty well.
Not a breakout year, but he played a lot.
And frankly, I thought he was better than he was going to be in his rookie year.
I think that a lot of people would agree with you there. We had high expectations because he's a first rounder.
But he was a very young and experienced first rounder.
So I think that kind of drops him down a little bit. So,
right.
Yeah, I think that's on.
13-3 in the Super Bowl, no good. First catch of the year would be a receiving touchdown and a long run after catch slant. So that didn't work out. But I think Eli Apple did have a good year.
First touchdown was a run.
It was.
Jennings.
And I think didn't have many of those the rest of the year after that.
But opening drive correct. Touchdown, remember?
Yes. But
wow.
Obviously, the Eli Apple, good rookie year, and you hope to build on that now moving forward. Now, he didn't have as many of those defensive pass interference and holding penalties
we
were
thought,
afraid of.
Yeah.
So
and,
he actually did a good
and
job.
And I look at Eli Apple as I looked at Landon Collins last year. He gained valuable experience playing in Spagnuolo's defense for a year. That's going to just – unbelievably help him going into next year.
Christian, 10-6, 3-3 in the NFC East. Close. If you would have predicted 4-2 in the NFC East, that would have put him at 11-5. So he was one win in the division away from that. Charlie in Portland, Maine. Anthony Dabble on the 53. Wrong.
And it's
now,
so
he
funny.
Just tweeted me
I know it's so
about
funny that,
that
all
I'm going to hit that later in the
okay,
show. I don't want to touch on that now.
All right.
I don't think that makes sense. Well, but Charlie, we'll get to you. Don't worry. Andre in Rochester, Dante Dion beats out Trevin Wade. He did make the practice squad.
He made
squad,
a practice
then he was
squad.
On IR, so.
I think he has a chance to make the team next year.
Ben Gruen, Kerry Wynn gets beaten out for a roster spot. Sorry.
No, denied.
Ben, did not happen. Matt, you can get John on the phone here. We're almost done with these. A.J. Marshall, Victor Cruz will be injury-free. That pretty much happened. He missed one game. Oh, you got him already. Okay, perfect. John, we'll get to you in a second. I got to finish these last couple predictions. So I got 3 or 4 left. We'll be quick. Max in New York City. The second, third, and fifth round picks will have a bigger impact than Eli Apple. That is incorrect.
Second, third.
Second round, maybe, but I wouldn't say the rest of the guys. I wouldn't say the rest of the guys.
No, I wouldn't. I would agree that. Yeah, I had to think of who they were.
Joseph in Virginia, Keenan Robinson, outside linebacker starter. He was a virtual starter in the middle
sure.
in nickel, so close, not quite. Mike in Florida, nothing else here really that we can work with. I got a Larry Donnell not on the 53 prediction. That didn't work out. Lennon, Maryland, Eli Apple will block 2 kicks this year. I don't know where the hell that
where
came
did that
from.
Come from?
A couple I got another one. A couple quarterbacks got him, but not many. Gashawn in Maryland, 6-10. She will err on the side of pessimism. So that did not work out for Kashawn.
Let me try to hit this.
Want
to
try it? All right. Now we got Texas Giant. Roger Lewis makes the team.
Oh,
got
there
that.
You go.
Good job, Texas Giant. Jerome in North Carolina.
Got it.
50 touchdowns and 5,000 yards for Eli Manning. Might have been a little optimistic there. Sorry, bud. And then Big Ed in Maryland.
Wait a sec. Did he say 50?
Yes, he did. That's correct.
Oh, man.
I'm not sure the team scored 50 touchdowns.
Has there anybody done 50?
In fact, I don't think the team did score 50 touchdowns over the course of the year, did they?
No way.
No.
Not even close.
All right, and then Big Ed in Maryland, 13-3. That obviously a little bit.
But that's Big Ed for you.
Yeah, it is Big Ed.
He is Captain
Optimism.
He errs on optimism, not pessimism.
The only thing that's easier to predict than what happens in NFL season. By the way, if you're watching on Twitter, thanks for joining us. Go to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app, and you can watch the rest of the show that way, and you can see our next guest, John Ledyard, who's out there in Mobile, Alabama, covering the Senior Bowl. And John, what I was saying is that the only thing easier than predicting the NFL season is predicting what players coming out in the draft are going to be superstars, so this should be pretty easy for you, huh?
Well, you'd think so, but it's a little bit trickier than it turns out.
Yeah, I would say, and unfortunately, you don't have a ton of the top players out there in Mobile with you guys down there. A lot of the top seniors opted not to go, but you do have some real good players there, so let's start there, real basic. Anybody really jump off the field to you in your first couple of days of practice down in Mobile?
Yeah, it's going to sound cliche, guys, but really O.J. Howard from Alabama, the tight end, has been the best player here. When people say that, I don't think it's a stretch. Sometimes I'll go against the grain and want to, and I certainly have other players that I think are being either overrated or underrated here, but he's the real deal. He's really shown the ability to be a more accomplished route runner than I kind of thought maybe he would coming in. I thought that would be his one bugaboo, but he's actually done really well at that. Some nuance in his route stems and the ability to separate vertically, he's great. He's a great athlete. At one point, he had to track a bad throw into like a crowd of offensive linemen doing warm-ups, and he did so. I mean, you're talking about running full speed, tracking a throw over your head with your eyes up into a crowd of 320-pound guys. I mean, that's just the kind of player he's, the kind of athlete he is, the kind of ball skills and just overall talent he has. And so he's been the best of the bunch here. But there's a couple of guys I think that could work their way into first-round consideration with strong performances here. Trey White, the corner from LSU, has some terrific feet. Reminds me a little bit of Will Redmond last year, but Redmond obviously had the injury concerns that dropped his stock before San Francisco took him. But I think White could be a guy who accelerates, but unfortunately he got hurt just the yesterday at the end of practice. So we'll see what his status is today. There's a couple of edge guys who I think are going to solidify themselves as high day two picks. Derek Rivers from Youngstown State being one of them. He's really had a great week. Dwayne Smoot from Illinois, and even some other guys I think that have really – Hassan Reddick from Temple, ability to play inside linebacker and play off the edge this week, and he may be the best player here at both positions. He really solidified things for himself, helped himself a lot, I think, and helped elevate his stock. Teams are going to be really excited about him, especially after he tests at the combine. I think he's going to test off the charts there, and he could work his way into being a top 50 pick.
I want to follow up real quick on Howard, the tight end from Alabama. I saw him make a couple one-handed catches, and you would assume that someone that plays tight end for Nick Saban in their run-first offense would be an accomplished blocker. John, I know from what you've seen this week, but more even so from what you saw in game filmed over the course of the year, what type of blocker is he at the tight end position?
Well, that's the crazy thing, and what makes Howard so unique is typically when you have an athlete like him, think Eric Ebron and even Vernon Davis coming out, he became a better blocker, but guys like that typically are a little more underdeveloped as blockers. So you're either getting the raw athlete that can play the move tight end spot, a la Gerald Everett and John U. Smith, two smaller school guys that are here. So you can get a guy like that, or you're getting a guy who is a little less accomplished athletically, but probably better in line. And O.J. Howard is the best of both worlds. He may be the best blocking tight end in the draft. He did that more often than not at Alabama. That was what he did more than anything. And different types of blocks. Split zone, he's kicking guys out. He's reaching guys on zone runs. He's doing all kinds of different stuff in that offense. And so from a technical and physical standpoint, the way he weighed in here, which was almost 250, which was about 10 to 15 pounds more than where most places had him listed, and the way he's still been able to move, I think he's no issue playing an inline role nor a move role. The tape shows a really good blocking. Not a perfect blocker, but for a college guy coming out, a really good blocking tight end. Everyone raves about his demeanor, his work ethic, his personality, the kind of kid he is, the stable background with which he's come from and been raised in. Just got all the components. If he tests as well as we expect at the combine, I think he said here he's planning to run in the 4.5s. That's where he's going to be. He's been tested on the lasers, right? And I think if he runs there at the combine, we're probably talking about a top 15 to 20 guy, even at a position like tight end.
Wow.
And really, when you think about John, when you think about this tight end position, it's one in the NFL that has been, you know, kind of being developed over the years, become more and more important. Obviously, the Giants would love to have a guy like that. I don't think they're going to maybe reach for one in the first round. But my question is, and obviously he's doing all the right things to be able to make him some money, because if he's going to move up in spaces and, you know, it's all about the where you land in that draft spot. My question to you, John, is the guys that are there, you see guys from Youngstown State, you see guys from Temple. Obviously these are the guys that want to be there because they need to try to convince these scouts that they are NFL caliber players. Is it more important that these – what are the scouts looking for? I know a lot of the teams have their people there at the Senior Bowl. Are they looking more at the mid-major school guys that are there because this is the competition that they need to see? Or is it they're really paying attention to the top-notch guys that are there? I know there's a lot of guys that aren't there that are going to be at the combine or even their work personal workout days at their universities.
Yeah, I think it's a good combination of both, to be honest. I mean, I think that definitely you want to see the top guys prove and assert themselves. And it's not that they elevate themselves here as much as they solidify themselves here, I think. But for the guys who are from smaller schools, I think you really want to see things like competitive toughness, aggressiveness, mental ability to pick up what they're being taught, which is a new offense and a new defense from NFL coaches in an incredibly short amount of time. So how well do they acclimate themselves to that and their responsibilities? You know, I think that part of it is huge. For guys offensively who didn't play in NFL-style schemes or, you know, played in a little more out there schemes or exotic schemes, how do they acclimate themselves to new things, to more NFL-type things? So, I mean, that we saw that with Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz last year. It was more about what those guys did mentally.
Sure.
Had teams believing in what they could do than it was anything else. So that part of it, and ability to sell yourself to an NFL coaching staff, I think that's critical. And so that for you small school guys is huge. But also tools. You know, they want to see what guys have high ceilings. You know, coaches are, you know, to say arrogant, but you know, they take pride in what they do. I think that they generally see a guy with tools and athletic ability and, you know, length and power and things like that. And maybe they're not as refined technically because they were at a smaller school. Maybe their coaching wasn't as good or wasn't to the NFL standards or so on and so forth. But they believe that they can take a guy like that and they can fix him and make him into something, a lot better. I think a guy like Troy, Antonio Garcia, their tackle here, who not a lot of people talked about during the regular season, but on tape, you know, physically he looks like Tyron Smith, and they have a little bit, some of the same tendencies. And a guy like that here, even though he's been a little bit hot and cold snap to snap, he's had some wow pass protection plays, and he's been very good in the run game. And I think because of that, a guy like that is going to go way higher than maybe his present skill set indicates, because he has all the tools and athleticism and work ethic, drive, personality, all the things they look for, that they feel like they can cultivate a better player and a star player out of somebody like that. So I think if you can show tools like that, you're more inclined to get scouts to be really excited about your future and taking you earlier than maybe where your present skills indicate.
Now, when you talk about tools, obviously those are the tools that they're using on the field. For our listeners and people that don't know, a typical week out there, are the players able to meet with these personnel guys? I know at the combine you have each person has a time slotted for them to interview and things like that. Let our listeners know, what's a typical day like, or even, you know, do these guys get to meet with the personnel guys, or is it just strictly anything that they see on the field is all they have access to them?
Yeah, what's great about the Senior Bowl is that there's so much access to players. There's so much access to players between teams and between the media. Players have every opportunity, no matter what has happened in their background. And some guys with some things in their background, like Jeremy Sprinkle, are here, and they need to sell themselves to teams and do those things. But yeah, a typical day, you know, Monday they come in, a lot of players are checking in, and teams are just all around the lobby in the hotel. Meeting rooms are off to the side, and a lot of meet right in the open, just right in the lounge area with players, and, you know, go over stuff with them. And some teams get really in-depth, that, you know, they'll ask X's and O's questions and bring up a whiteboard or bring up an iPad and ask the players to diagram things or ask the players to tell them what's your responsibility in these situations. Yesterday, right after practice, the Eagle scouts are out on the field and they're drilling Jordan Willis about different things. The Kansas State defensive end, you know, what's your responsibility if this type of play unfolds before you, and things like that. And, you know, what's your favorite pass rush move and why?
Sure.
You know, how do you feel like you win as a player? Things like that. So, yeah, the access between players, and that continues. Monday, you have Tuesday night, you have like probably 5-hour period where teams meet with players. Same with Wednesday and Thursday night, and in between, you know, after practices in the mornings. Now the practice got moved back. They start at 12:15, and they run until about 5. So,
wow.
Really the rest of the day, for the most part, is open for teams and players to be able to meet and talk. So we report on different meetings that we see, but for the vast majority of these teams, they'll meet with just about every player here, I think, and go over stuff. Depending on how interested they are, determines the length and the in-depthness of the conversation. But it's a pretty great time for players in terms of what they can prove off the field more than anything at the Senior Bowl.
We're joined by John Ledyard, covers the NFL draft for the Pylon, also the Steelers for Scout.com. You mentioned some of the bigger school guys, and my first question, John, about guys that kind of jumped out and surprised you. Anybody from smaller schools that have kind of jumped out at you and you've taken some notice of that maybe you weren't super familiar with? I know one of the guys that I was watching yesterday in some offensive line drills did a really nice job was the kid Lamp, who's kind of moving from tackle inside to guard. They think he could be a good player. Anybody else from those smaller schools have jumped out to you at all?
Yeah, I think so. Derek Rivers, I mentioned him earlier, but the edge guy from Youngstown State, FCS guy, and there's four Division II guys here, two inside linebackers, a quarterback, and I believe a safety, I think it was. So there's guys from even from that level getting opportunities, and there's about 12 FCS guys here, I think. So a number of those guys getting opportunities. I thought Rivers has proved far and away that he belongs. I know this is a great edge-rushing class, but had great tape at Youngstown State, played and had great production there. A very good run defender. In fact, I think he's the best run defending edge here. A 6'4 guy, but plays with incredible leverage and bend, which suggests the kind of flexibility you need to be able to turn the corner. He's still developing a little bit as a pass rusher, but he's shown speed to power and the ability to bull rush and the ability to dip and rip on the outside and win the edge. So when you have those two components, makes you a dangerous guy. If he can recognize inside counters and things like that, some team's going to love him. I mean, physically, 6'4", 255. He's athletic. He's very smart and sharp and technical against the run. He's a guy you can plug in, I think, from an FCS level, which is pretty rare. I think some other guys, you know, UConn's not the smallest school, but Obi Molefonwu, safety there, he looks like a Greek god. This guy's just chiseled, and he has the size and athleticism teams are going to want at the position. And I need to watch him a little more to see how good he is technically, you know, how well he acclimates himself in coverage, range, eyes, things like that. But Taylor Moten from Western Michigan has been, I think, the best offensive tackle here. He's acclimated himself extremely well. I came in really liking Antonio Garcia from Troy, who I mentioned already. I still think he's had a great week and asserted himself well, and will have scouts excited about his potential. But to me, Moton's been the best guy here among the offensive tackles. So he's done well. Trent Taylor from Louisiana Tech's done well as a route runner. Kareem Hunt from Toledo is one of the best backs here. It's hard to evaluate running backs here, but he's played extremely well. I think Jonnu Smith and Gerald Everett have shown some athleticism at tight end, which they need to. You mentioned Forrest Lamp. He got hurt after the first day of practice. I don't think it's a serious thing, but he probably won't play the rest of the week. But he's a guy who probably is one of the few first-rounders that's here. I think teams will move him inside the guard and really fall in love with his skill set.
I want to follow up. You mentioned a couple offensive linemen there, John, and I think Giant fans know that they're trying to improve specifically at the offensive tackle spot potentially in the draft. But overall, I know early signs from this class is that it's not a particular strong offensive tackle draft or offensive line in general. Give me the rundown on not just Senior Bowl participants, but everybody that's out there who might have first-round talent or ability and could potentially this early in the conversation be a fit in terms of talent and who'll be available for the Giants when they pick in the mid-20s.
Yeah, it's been billed as a bad O-line class and a bad tackle class, but I don't know that it's necessarily bad. It maybe needs a little bit of work. Maybe not as good as last year's offensive tackle class at the top, but still a really solid group. I think Taylor Moten, who I mentioned, and Tony Garcia from Troy, those guys are going to get first-round consideration, especially after the week they've had. And for Garcia's tools and for Moten, I think he's going to get first-round consideration because of the class, but also his tape is really good, and he continues to show out here. And there might be some technical things that need to improve for him, but I think he has the tools, the athleticism, the physicality. If he shows that in the film on the teams and things like that, that he has a good understanding of NFL concepts, the teams are going to get really excited about him. Cam Robinson from Alabama is here, underclassman who declared. He's a very talented kid who was really inconsistent there. But, again, tools. You know, Eric Flowers, you guys know, you've seen him. He went in the top 10. And, you know, a lot of these guys are better and more refined than he was coming out. So teams are willing to take a shot on size, athleticism, length, things like that. We see it year after year on the offensive line. So two of the better guys are probably Ryan Ramczyk from Wisconsin and Garrett Bowles from Utah. I've seen a little bit of Bowles and really liked what I saw, but he's going to be like a 25-year-old rookie, I think, 25 and a half. And he's had some off-the-field issues in the past. He's really turned around his life, I think, and teams will be excited about that. I think there's some injury stuff, and Ramczyk has a hip injury and will need surgery and may not work out at all before the draft happens. So those guys are kind of talked about as the best two tackles, but they both kind of have some big question marks. I think before it's all said and done, we're going to see some of these other guys who are a little more raw but younger and have maybe better tools rise up maybe above those guys. But here the offensive tackle class has been really hit or miss. I mentioned Garcia and Moten as the winners, but guys like Connor McDermott has really struggled. Adam Biznawati from Pitt has really struggled. Zach Banner, I'm not sure he's draftable after this week from USC. So Julian Davenport, a raw guy. So there's guys with tools that are here that need some work. There's guys that have really proved themselves, like Moten, I think. But for the most part, the bigger school guys that are here have been the ones that have struggled far more than the smaller school guys.
John, let me ask you a question. I'm forgetting his name. Is it Devin?
Dalvin Cook.
Dalvin Cook.
Yeah.
Is he at the Senior Bowl this week?
He's not. He's an underclassman that declared. So he's you have to be like – well, there's a couple. There's one third-year senior that's here just because he graduated. But you have to have either graduated or completed 4 years and completed your four-year tenure in college.
Okay. So he will graduate and be – what's the deal with him? Is he not coming out this year?
No, he's coming out, but he's just an underclassman declaration, so he won't be at the Senior Bowl, but he will be at the Combine.
Okay,
yeah,
so
and I would expect him to light it up at the Combine.
And you definitely see him as a top 10 pick this year, somebody?
I see him as the top running back right now. I have a lot more work to do, I think, but on the running back group, but I see him definitely as a guy who could push for a top 10 spot. I don't think he's Ezekiel Elliott from last year.
That's my question,
Unless a guy is as good as Elliott or as refined as Elliott, I hesitate to say take a running back top 10, especially in a class that's this good. But I think Cook is a really good player who, if he can get in the right offense, and I think there's going to be a lot of interest from Philadelphia, but I think that he is going to be a guy who can really
see his doctor
at the next level.
Yeah, I want to follow up. I want to follow up on the running back class because it's really supposed to be a strong class, John. And you know, Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, all guys that are not at the Senior Bowl, but guys that have various skill sets and various levels of success. Do you consider? I know you just said you think Cook's the best running back in the class. I know most people think it's Fournette. Give me the rundown on the top of the running back class in your opinion. And how do you think Christian McCaffrey fits in the NFL? I watched him a lot at Stanford. I think he can be a first and second down back as well as with his pass catching ability. Some other people want to kind of shoehorn him into a receiving running back type of role. How do you see that top three group?
Yeah, the funny thing is, John, that there's just not a lot of every down backs in the NFL. So,
sure.
You know, you have your Le'Veon Bells and you have your – not that they don't have the skill set for it even. It's just not the way teams choose to use them. They don't like to workhorse their backs anymore. So even if a guy has a skill set for it, he's probably going to be in some capacity in a rotation. Now, he may get the majority of the carries. And I think McCaffrey's capable of that. I really like his skill set. I like Fournette. I don't love Fournette like some people do. I don't think he's a top five talent like some people do. I think he's a good player with a really high floor, so he's going to be a really solid pro. I just don't know if I see a really high ceiling, and I don't think he's going to blow away the combine like people think he will. I think he's a fine athlete for his size. I just don't think he's a elite, top-tier, generational-type athlete like some people talk about. So I like him. A guy that's not getting really any hype, and I don't understand it, is Jamal Williams from BYU. I mean, this kid is 6 foot, 210 here, big physical runner, a guy who has a crazy agility at the second level, can cut on a dime. It was super productive this year. He's had some injuries in his past. But was healthy and productive this year, has been here at the Senior Bowl. And like I said, running backs aren't a position to evaluate because they don't really tackle full speed a ton here. So there's very little you can glean from the running backs other than vision and cuts, which you usually need to see the All-22 film room to be able to identify. But I really like him. I really like his skill set. I think he's going to be a guy that rises if he has a good combine. I think he'll be one of the guys. Kareem Hunt that's here from Toledo. Really good player. I think those are the two best backs here. But, yeah, there's a lot of good backs. I mean, McCaffrey, you talked about Alvin Kamara from Tennessee, I think is a really good back who can catch the ball really well. That'll be valued. And I'm sure there's other ones, too, that are slipping my mind right now. But there's probably going to be four or five backs that are top 50 worthy, maybe a couple more when it's all said and done. Teams are going to fall in love with a couple of these guys. And we know there's a couple teams that really need one, you know, the Giants being one of them maybe, you know, depending on what they think of Perkins. I liked him a lot last year, but, you know, the Eagles could be another one. The Redskins could be one. So even in that division in the NFC East, you guys could have a lot of teams trying to find a running back in this draft.
Well, it looks like the Eagles will get the first pick in the first round for above us. So I don't know if they're going to kick a running back. But so when you look collectively at this class of 2017, what position do you get excited about? Or actually, no, I shouldn't say excited. Are you excited? What do you think is the what position is heavy this year? Is it defensive end? Is it linebackers? Where do you think that first round is going to be heavy-handed?
Oh, definitely those edge guys. I mean, the 3-4 outside linebacker, 4-3 defensive end types, this class is stacked. I mean, I probably have it, – it's very similar to the defensive interior defensive line class from last year in terms of top-end talent and depth. I probably have about – you know, if you count Jonathan Allen from Alabama and Malik McDowell from Michigan State and Solomon Thomas from Stanford as edge guys, I probably have about 10 edge guys I like in the first round. It's just that loaded of a class. You could see 20, 25 go in the first three rounds, I think, just because of the fact that it's such a valued position.
Wow.
Pass rushers, cornerbacks, quarterbacks, you know, these are the positions, and tackles. Those are the positions that are more valued now more than ever before. You know, you're talking about NFL defenses are a nickel defense about 77% of the time now as a whole. You know, and it changes a little bit team to team. Some teams are more than that. But for the most part, the average is about 77, and that's gone up every year for the past 8 years. And so that number is just going to keep climbing, which means pass rushers, which means nickel corners are now starters, unquestionably starters, pass rushers both on the edge and guys who can kick inside and rush from an interior spot. Even if you're giving up something against the run, teams would prefer that. They'd rather – I mean, Anthony Zettel's playing for the Lions this year, playing 20% of their snaps, and he's one of the worst run defenders I've ever seen in the NFL. But they care about pass rush ability.
Yeah.
That's what these teams care about.
So, it also puts –
you can get guys like that all over your front defensively are what teams going to be really excited about. This class is just stocked full of guys who can get off the edge and play, who can line up inside and win. It's for that and cornerback position – this class is absolutely loaded. I think we're going to see defense heavy in the top 100 picks and a lot of good players that will be able to help teams early on.
Really, when you think about these, if it's that heavy, you want these guys, they need to really do well at these combines, because if there's so many of them going from the first to the second round, I know I'm talking about money here, but it's a significant amount from that first to second round money. And, you know, if you're a guy that a lot of people think that maybe you are a second rounder and you elevate yourself at the combine and get to a first and vice versa, you know, you got to really prepare yourself and do well at this combine and even in this game coming up this weekend. So, you know, a lot of pressure on these kids. You know, you understand what they're going through. They've been schooled, as you know, John. They have their agents telling them what to do and what not to do. And you just hope that all these kids can perform the way they want to, because it is a tough business. But it's the start of a season that I know you're excited about. It. John and I we're just on the cusp of getting ready for all the talk about the draft and what the Giants are going to do. So a lot of these names are new to us, but over the next month or so, we're going to get to know all of them that you mentioned.
Sure, yeah, and it's a fun class, guys. You guys are going to love it. It's a class that's loaded at positions like cornerback, at positions like tight end, pass rushers that we talked about. There's a lot of depth at receiver, I think, so that's good. The running back class is loaded. I think the quarterback class is better than people are billing it. The defensive line class isn't great, but the linebacker class isn't great, but they both have a couple guys who are really good even at those spots.
John, great stuff. We appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of your time at the Senior Bowl down in Mobile, and we will talk to you down the road as we get closer to the NFL Combine, and hopefully I'll see you out in Indianapolis, all right?
Hey, absolutely. Always great chatting with you guys. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you, John.
And
John will head out to practice now. Practice starts in about a half an hour or so down there in Mobile, day three. If you want to check that out, NFL Network airs the practices live. And I thought it was funny. I was watching I didn't have a chance to watch yesterday because I was on the road. We had a college basketball game last night I was doing. But I watched it the first day. And, you know, Mike Mayock's trying to describe what he's seeing on the field with all the drills and the practice. And he's literally on the air telling the director what to shoot so the fans can see what he's trying to explain. And it was clear that, I don't know if they didn't have a production meeting or what happened, but like he's trying to say, he's like, all right, guys, now let's show the all 22 so we can see what both guys are doing, and then we can describe the footwork. And it was just really, really funny that he was, you could tell he was getting frustrated where he was trying to talk about the corner technique on the wide receiver.
And they're showing a D lineman.
But they're showing the quarterback throw the pass instead of the one-on-one. It was just like, it was very funny.
It sounds like somebody called in sick that day on the switchboard side or whatever.
Honestly, the problem is when you're evaluating players at the Senior Bowl, if you're somebody that usually directs a TV broadcast for an NFL football game, you're showing completely different things.
Sure.
And you really have to get out of your comfort zone to direct that properly, which I just think – that's an inside TV business type of thing, folks, which I think
makes sense.
Kind of interesting.
It totally makes sense.
All right, let's get to the calls at 201-939-4513. Steve in Washington, D.C. has been waiting patiently. He was first up today, so we'll get to him right away. Steve-O, how are you, buddy?
Yo, happy new year, John. What's up, Pete?
How are you,
doing
my
great,
man?
Doing great, Steve. How are you?
Thanks for calling in,
my friend. We're doing great.
Hey, man. Hey, thanks. Hey, first of all, this is the first time I ever got a chance to talk to Steve, man. I wanted to say thank you, man.
You're welcome.
Everything you did.
Nice.
My team, man, I know it's the first time, but.
Thank you.
You have no idea what your contributions have meant to me, so thank you.
Well, I appreciate that.
And if you ever run into a deal, man, tell him, don't come back on my show without his ring. He promised me he'd wear the ring. He won that ring yet since he's been back.
All right. Well, that's deal for you. He's got hit in the head a couple times. He doesn't remember things.
Hey, listen, John, I actually had us 11-5 last year, man. That was my prediction.
Well, you're all over. Good job, Steve-O.
Very good.
You know, we could have been 13-3, though, very easily.
But Steve, at the same time, you also could have been 9-7 very easily, and that's how the NFL goes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, John, I got to go on record, man. I really need to see a lot more from Coach. I got to see a lot more.
In what way, Steve?
I'm just not sold yet. His last interview, I was very, very pleased to hear, you know, how humble he was as far as how he was going to evaluate every single thing, from play calling to, offensive coordinator. So, I am pleased with what I hear, man. So I hope he can continue to grow as a coach.
Well, he will. He will. Steve, hold on real quick. So you got to understand, going from an offensive coordinator position to wearing the head coach hat is a big transition. Now, you can say, well, how different is it? You've been in football a long time. You've been an offensive coordinator. You got to understand that your day now becomes segmented into, okay, I'm going to be here, and I'm going to be here if I'm an offensive coordinator. Now I'm going to be bump, 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 bump as a head coach. So there is a little bit of a learning process. And, really, when we talk about rookies – you're talking about a rookie head coach. So he's going to go through the growing pains just like a rookie player was going to go through the growing pains as being a head coach. And I think you're right. I think that you're going to understand that he's going to do things differently next year where he's evaluated himself and his staff. And I think that's going to be important for the success of the team going forward.
Well, hey, I couldn't put it better myself. But my thing is this. I'm just really not sure of the system that we got to implement. I don't really feel like we have an identity yet. And I'm not sure how much he's going to dig in, but, I'm looking at the Packers and, a lot of things he's doing. I'm wondering if he's going to try to emulate that, basically blindly throughout the NFC East. I know we didn't have a fullback last year. That really, really hurt us. And I'm just wondering if first of all, we have to run the ball way more than what he did. And he just hasn't proven to me. He's a play caller. Forget an offensive coordinator or a head coach. I'm just really not sure it's in his DNA. I'm looking at some of the things he does, and it's beyond head scratching. I'm like, okay, it's just not in you.
Well, so, Steve, I will say this, though. In fairness, he did do a pretty good job calling plays as the OC.
They were pretty.
The year prior, they were sixth in the league in offense. They did move the ball up and down the field. So, in fairness, look, and it's different being the play caller and a head coach. I get that. I'm not arguing that point. You're absolutely right. That's number one. Number two, I do think the team has an identity. I just don't think it's the identity that fans want it to be. I think the team, like you said, I think the team is a West Coast offense team. I mean, they basically run the same system that Mike McCarthy does in Green Bay. Jeff, you watch the games. They run the same route combinations, the same plays.
Without the fullback.
You're going to use
Aaron Rodgers. He can't improvise, man. Come on. That's not his strength.
Well, to answer your question, you know, he has to – I think he takes a segmentation of the West Coast offense, as John said, and he has to put it in with the personnel that he has with this team. You can't expect – you cannot expect Eli Manning to be Rodgers-esque because he's not. So you get stop comparing those two in this offense because it's just not the way it works. So you got to kind of organically move into – to an offense that suits the personnel on this team. Last year, in my opinion,
that's what I'm hoping.
I think it'll change. I think the tight end position, and I don't know about the fullback position. I don't know where the thinking process is, there is offensively. If it's a dual guy, a tight end that can play the H-back, or is it just a true fullback? I don't know yet.
Because Green Bay, and Steve, you know this. I think you've actually called up and talked to us about this. The Packers used a traditional fullback. They did with John Kuhn, and now this year they did with Gronkowski. So I think it's interesting.
And
that
last
year
they used Hanoski here, but this year they didn't win nothing.
Well, Whitlock. Oh,
Excuse me.
Yeah, it's the run pass ratio that has me concerned because I don't think that will translate. Quite frankly, you know, to be frank, I just don't think that will translate in the NFC East. We have to run the ball at least.
Well,
40%
we did it last
of the time,
week.
If not 45.
The ratio was close.
Well, Steve, on first down at least, I can tell you for a fact, on first down, the Giants ran the ball, I believe it was 51 or 52% of the time. So on first down at least, they were almost 50-50 run pass. So they were not predictable on first down.
And also, if you were, I don't know if you were listening to us last week when John was, we were doing a study of that offense, because of the production on first down, skewed the run pass ratio on second down. So it all has it all lends itself to the play calling. So you're not going to, you know what I'm saying? Are you following me here? So if you didn't have all those negative plays like they did, the Giants had, they led the league in negative plays on first down.
Yeah, but why do you think they led the league in negative plays?
Okay.
We were so predictable, we ran the same play. We were going to land the game, run the play, and then come run right back and run the same exact play.
And
well,
that,
you know,
is
Jennings
exact.
Run at the middle.
Well,
Slow
Steve,
feet run at the middle.
Well, Steve, I think, I think a bigger problem, too, and I saw this when I went back and I looked at a lot of the running plays on tape this year. Yeah, the offensive line didn't get the powerful push forward. They didn't move the line of scrimmage. But at the same time, in my opinion at least, I think a lot of the negative plays, quite frankly, had a lot to do with the fact that the tight ends often let defensive ends and outside linebackers plunge down the line of scrimmage and get into the backfield completely unblocked. And I think we saw that way too many times. And I think that's going to happen whether they know a play is coming or not. You say it's predictability. I personally think it lends more to execution. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, no question.
Because, I agree with you too. I'm basically on executing the play. But here's the problem I have. You know, first of all, you know, we know the obvious things. Everyone wants to point out flowers, but he needs to just work on his flexibility, possibly take some yoga. But the bottom line is this: we can't continue to run from the shotgun either. You know, that killed us. That killed us. He needs to lessen the space to help Flowers out. You got to lessen the space, and you got to run the ball consistently. It's more of an attitude type thing. And so we were basically in a run block, you know, formation while we were trying to, a pass blocking formation while we were the ball. So, you know, I think it was more schematically than it was the plays. I just don't feel like we did the right thing schematically in order to, you know, to help the players, you know, to their full potential. So, I know we could debate that all day.
Sure,
really, you know.
Well, I do believe this, Steve.
I don't want to use my time because I'm happy I got through. It's been a while, but I just want to ask him one question before I kind of, you know, and I'll listen off air, guys. But, you know, I'm just hearing, first of all, two questions. First of all, first one is, where do you see us going if, you know, if we decide to go a running back in the draft? You know, not saying you're Jerry Reese. I'm just saying, where do you see us going for running back in the draft? What round?
I personally would not do it in the first or second round. I really like Paul Perkins, Steve. I think he's very good. I think he can be one of your two primary backs next year. And I think, you know, you just heard from John, it's a very deep running back class. I think if you want to pick a running back, which I'd be fine with, I think you're looking anywhere between rounds 3 and 5 if you want to go in that direction. Me personally, that would be my opinion on the subject.
Well, I totally agree. I'm even willing to say maybe, you know, fourth round would probably be my
that's fine.
My cutoff right now, depending on who's there. But
sure.
That's kind of, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I said, no, Steve, I'm agreeing with you, absolutely.
Yeah, that's going into my next question. First of all, I've been hearing a lot of talk about we're talking to this running back, we're talking to that running back. I was kind of thinking it was probably more likely to happen next year, I don't really want a fifth or sixth round quarterback right now. You know, that's not who I want to replace or even want to be a successor of Eli. But, you know, you can, if you don't mind, you know, give me your take on that. And then who you know, what positions do you guys see on first and second round? And I'll go ahead and listen off air. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Thank you, Steve.
Great to talk to you. And enjoy your New Year. Thanks.
Don't be a stranger, man. I want to hear from you again soon. Look, it's hard to say. I mean, you have to get through free agency first, Jeff. I mean, you have to see what happens with Hankins and JPP.
Well, that was my first response, because if you're gonna lose one or both of those, then you gotta look first round to replace one of those guys.
And like John said, the defensive end class is very big, very strong.
Right. So, and then as far as a quarterback, I think what Giants fans need to look at is this. It's obviously imminent that at some point in time this has to be addressed. Okay, I think collectively from a personnel and the general manager, they're going to get together and say, if there's a quarterback, remember how they always say the best available?
Yeah.
If there's a quarterback sitting there at best available and they're on his board, this is probably the time that they take someone like that.
Well, they did it with Ryan Nassib 4 years ago, and I think they're in the situation where they could do that type of thing again.
Yeah, with a little bit. But with the Ryan Nassib one, I think they kind of understood that this is a guy we like. We know he's probably not going to play. But this one,
and they actually said they would prefer it if he doesn't play, because exactly, that means Eli is healthy.
Where this pick with this quarterback, you have to understand this guy is. We're going to probably draft this guy, and this is a guy that's probably going to play for us.
Yeah,
maybe in 3 years. Okay, I don't know if they get four. They get 5 year contracts nowadays.
First
right?
round picks get a four with a fifth year option, and the rest of the draft gets four.
It's with four. So you know, so that's kind of the thinking in my mind. What you got to think about in this process, opposed to when Nassib was getting drafted, when he was. That they probably were thinking to themselves, you know, Eli's at the age that he was then, 4 or 5 years ago. I think a quarterback now is gonna matter who's there, and you know, if a guy there is someone that's on their board and it's high, they're gonna pick him. That's just the way that they work. I feel like
I agree. They're not in a position where they have to reach for a quarterback. If they find the guy at the right place at the right time with the right value, that's when they're gonna pick.
And really, when you look at okay, so yeah, that's great. Then if that happens, that's fine. But I also think you got to look at next year, and you look at who the quarterback class is. You know, predictability here. Who's coming out next year? Because there's going to be more of a need next year than there will be this year, in my opinion, for a quarterback.
Right. All right, let's go back to the phones. Len in Columbia, Maryland. He was next up. Hi, Len. We got two old school guys to lead off the show. How are you,
bud?
There you
go, John. Steve. Wow. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, Len.
I got to tell you, I got to take 30 seconds. There was a time. God, this has got to go back, John. 3 years, maybe 4 years.
Yes.
When you weren't even on screen, it was just the telephone.
Yeah. It was Jeff, audio only.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Jeff.
Yes.
John put me on with Steve. I'm not sure how he did it because I'm not up on the technology at that point.
I
actually got during the show. It was scintillating, big blue kickoff live. John, do you remember that day?
I do, because I remember you guys had opposing opinions on the same topic, and you were both on hold at the same time. So I said, you know what? To hell with
it. Go
at it. We're putting them both on.
That's
great,
awesome.
Great. It's really great to hear Steve. hey, listen, thanks for having the guest on, even though it's still –
a little early,
I know,
right?
We got to start thinking about it, but
well, we do.
It's still a little. It just seems like it's still a little early.
I agree with you.
I don't know. It just seems like the last 2 weeks is the frantic period. That's when all the real information comes out, and you really start to see, you know, changes in first and second round.
Absolutely, but Len.
He was pretty good.
And Len, what I'll do, I'm going to do one more Senior Bowl spot tomorrow, because then all the practice will be over. It'll kind of wrap up the day. Then I plan on heading over towards free agency. Really, for the next few weeks. And then we're not going to hit the draft again until we get closer to the Senior Bowl. Combine. Because like you said, Len, really have people moving around now until you get to the Combine and you get more information, you get the personal workout days. Until that happens, you're really just recycling the same stuff over and over again.
And when is the Combine this year?
The Combine is actually the first workout. No, it's later.
The first week of March.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're going to have about a month and change until the Combine gets here.
I'll be here before you know it.
The Combine, I think, goes right up against the first day that you can franchise a player.
You're absolutely right. It does. The last day of the Combine, I believe, is March 6th. And I believe that is the first day you can start franchising players. You're absolutely right.
I think you can start talking to them on March 1st. And you can sign them. You can sign them on March 6th,
yeah,
if I remember the calendar.
Which, by the way, will make our combine shows a lot of fun because there are so many NFL insiders out there.
Oh yeah,
and they'll be able to really jump on with us and give us a not even just a look into what the prospects are doing, but also what the free agents are doing.
You know, I changed my opinion of the importance of play calling and the overall success of a play. It almost seems like from phone call to phone call. But you know, I'm a big execution guy.
Me too.
And I keep thinking to myself, these plays are not designed to lose 2 yards.
And I
keep flashing back, Jeff. I know I've talked to John about this before. I keep flashing back to the first play of the playoff game against the Packers, 3 weeks ago. And, handoff to Perkins going right, smothered for a 2-yard loss. I mean, just almost, Daniels almost untouched. I mean, it's just almost nightmarish because it sums up the whole year.
Yeah.
And, come on, get your body in front of somebody. The offensive line just didn't seem to be all year long, didn't seem to be physically strong. I want to see the guards be like Chris Snee. Well, nobody's going to be like Chris Snee, but let me just use him as an example. You know, Chris was into powerlifting. If you ever saw me, Jeff, you'll know I'm not a power lifter.
Neither is Jeff, by the way.
You know, it just seems
never
like
was
an
either.
Offensive guard. It's even or more
me.
Important than weightlifting. I mean, the power out of the guard position. I mean, it didn't seem to be there the whole year.
No, I think that's fair. I mean,
you got to move those
you
guys.
Know, with all due respect to those guys, I just think we need to get stronger along the offensive
line. No, Len, I agree. I think a fair criticism of the line, even when they are effective. They don't have those, mauling, massive guys that are going to get downhill and really move the line of scrimmage. They're more technicians that use technique to create spaces and holes. I think if you're going to have a criticism, I think that's a fair one.
Yeah, and into the middle, too. I think, we showed a little weakness. I don't know. Maybe Richburg was hurt. Maybe he was banged up. I don't know. But it just seems like we need to get a little stronger in the It's a little stronger in the middle. Hey, your numbers last Friday, I was frantically writing down some of the things that you had come up with and, mulled them over in my mind. And then I got to the point that it was almost paralysis through analysis.
Yeah,
John.
It's hard.
But,
it is.
But they were really quite revealing.
Yeah, they were.
And,
good
and,
job,
and
by John.
Gave me an opportunity to kind of look at, where do we need to, where do we need to be making the changes and so forth. It's if you look at those numbers and you put our record of 11-5 next to those
equate.
Offensive numbers,
it
you say
equate.
To yourself, how the heck did we win 11 games?
Defense.
The defense, Len, that's how.
Yeah.
But the other, and one other point on that, and this is for me kind of the negative side, you look at those numbers and you say to yourself, how are we ever going to win 11 games ever again?
Well, those numbers can't get better, Len. And I think that's – maybe I didn't make this point, and I should have. The optimism you should have is that the Giants, with basically the same personnel, went from – I forget which specific stat it was. I think it was passing – here we go. It was quarterback rating on passes of 21 or more yards. From
right.
2015 to 2016, they went from the best team in the league to I think, the 28th or 29th ranked
yes.
team in the league.
Yes.
With basically
yes.
an improvement in personnel in the passing
no
game.
Question.
So these things from year to year can get fixed even if you don't have a huge change in talent. And I think that's the positive you take out of all that.
And maybe that's where Steve was taking us with play calling. I mean maybe that's the integral –
Well,
you know, one of
that.
The integral parts
yeah.
of this is that we, maybe we were a little predictable by the time we got to the end of the season. But, those numbers, we're not getting to 11-5 again with those numbers.
Probably not.
I mean, something's going to have to change. Hey, let me ask you a question.
Yeah, real fast, Len. Then we got to go.
Lance and Paul had a real good, throw-out question yesterday. Who do you see, excelling in 2017? Who's going to be a star? And I started thinking about the middle linebacker position, and I'm hoping, although we certainly didn't see much of them during the season, I'm hoping that C.J. Goodson
BJ.
Gives us an opportunity, John, to settle on a guy for a couple of years. I mean, it's been rent a linebacker for the last
yeah,
3 years.
Yeah, Len, honestly,
what the heck are we doing?
Len, I agree with you. I think you're right, and I think on first and second down next year, we will see B.J. Goodson as the Giants middle
Good.
Linebacker. In my opinion, that's what I think. I got three
yeah.
more calls I got to get to, Len. I got to run, okay?
Okay, all right. Thank you.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you,
give us a call
yep.
back. And I think That's where Goodson will fit. Sure. Now, I've talked to guys and we talked to the coaches. To me, he's not a backup change of direction cover guy. But if you want a guy in first and second down that'll thump against the run, I think B.J. Goodson will be fine in that spot next year. Kelvin Shepard's a free agent. You draft a guy like Goodson to develop and put into a starting spot eventually, I think that's a good fit for him.
Yep, I do too. And you know, you need four linebackers in this system. So, I mean,
four or five, to be honest with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and you know, he was a rookie this year, played a lot of special teams, got in on some linebackers, and he had a nice year of just learning the system. You know, but they do. I agree with you. I see him in the lineup very soon.
And I think you'd like to see Keenan Robinson back. He had a good year. Jonathan Casillas, obviously defensive captain. Those can be your third down linebackers again if you like. So
I think it's very important to keep one of those. I mean, Shepard. I really do. I think he did a nice job.
Oh, I think he did too.
And I feel he. Why would he want to leave? You know, unless it's for big money somewhere, which I don't think he'll get. But
all right, let's go to Jersey now. Tony in Hoboken. Tony, you're up next. Thanks for being patient, Tone. How are you?
Hey, how you doing, John?
Doing well, Tony. How are you?
Hi,
doing,
Tony. Good, thank you.
How you doing, Jeff?
Good.
Big fan, Jeff. Big
thank
fan.
You. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk. I actually called yesterday and was talking about Paul Perkins and you know, how good he is. And towards the end of the show, I was listening to it, and Paul was talking about giving him only like 15 touches. When he went to prove that he doesn't really touch that much, he was putting out numbers what he did in UCLA, and he was contradicting himself with what he was saying. He was like, "Yeah, well, he ran for, he touched 23, 24, 24. The most touched he had was 28 times. He is a diamond in the rough. He is a three down back." But if we want to go with a two back, I think Deontay Foreman from Texas would be a pretty good fit.
He's a big boy. He's a big boy. Yeah. He's about 240 pounds.
He's like a
Derrick Henry type. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a lightning and thunder. Mm-hmm. And but I really think all this gets fixed if you just fix the offensive line.
Well,
that helps.
Everything gets fixed. You know what? We had Joe Thomas. Now, you're going to tell me, if Joe Thomas was here for the first round, the 23rd pick, would we pick him?
Well, but Tony, you assume that offer was on the table and could have gotten done. Nobody knows that for sure. Those are the reports. I can't tell you for a fact that that's true or not. But if you want to live in that hypothetical world, I think that's something that you would have to consider.
Yeah, I definitely understand, but what I'm saying is that everybody was talking about, like, we can't give a first-round pick for Joe Thomas. Joe Thomas was, I believe, well, in hindsight now, of course, but he possibly could have gotten us to the Super Bowl.
I think that's maybe a little – I think that's a little strong, Tony, but I certainly think he would have been – but again, this is a theoretical world that we're talking about, fantasy land right now. He obviously would have been – an upgrade at the position.
And he also would have been a little bit of a liability with his age. And also,
contract.
You're not going to – contract, and the team is not going to give up a first-round draft pick for him. There's no way. No way.
All right, Tony, we got to run, pal. Appreciate the call,
right,
my man.
Right,
thank you, pal. But look, I agree with him on Perkins. I think Perkins is very good. And I don't think – 15 touches, I would go closer to 18 to 20, to be honest with you.
15 to 20.
Because to me, Shane Vereen's still going to be here, and he's going to be your third down guy. And then maybe you mix in a third bigger running back in short yardage that'll maybe get 5 carries a game or something like that. I think that's a good split.
Yeah, and I think that he got better as the season because, you know, he was a late bloomer. He had nothing. You know, learning as a rookie to play in the National Football League, people, is very difficult. And not – it's, you know, for those guys to just – take the ball and run to the whatever hole they're supposed to, that's fine.
Yeah.
But it's pass protection. It's changing of plays.
Which he did get better at during the year.
That's what I'm saying. So as soon as he learns a little bit, so it's just his rookie year was perfect for him. He got his feet wet, and now going into next year. And I keep saying this comparison. Just look at Landon Collins.
Yeah.
Okay, look at the way that guy progressed from 1 to 2 the second year. The same thing with these younger guys that played this year. And there were a lot of rookies that played this year. That's going to help. Eli Apple. You got Adams, the tight end. That's going to be a big thing. I saw – now, listen, I'm not comparing the two between Cook and Adams, Okay, but you saw a little bit of the athleticism that you see in Cook that I see in Adams at the tight end position. He's that tall, lean-looking tight end. Maybe he can fit into a mold like that. He needs to put a little more weight on. I don't think he's, you know, that big. So, anyways.
201-939-4513. Ty in Maryland is up next. Ty, how are you?
Hey, Ty.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hi, Ty.
All right. Yeah, the last caller kind of stole my thunder, no pun intended. We're talking about Foreman there.
Oh, really? Wow, that's ironic.
I've got a couple of tweets about Deontay Foreman, too.
Yeah, he doesn't get the credit that he deserves coming out of Texas. You know, I think a lot of Texas running backs are coming back to the forefront in the NFL now. So he's a person to look for in the draft. But what I wanted to talk about today was a couple of days ago, you guys talked to Paul Schwartz.
Yes.
And you and Meadowlands were talking about possibly getting a big receiver, a big body receiver. Is that maybe an option? And then Paul alluded to maybe he doesn't have to be a receiver. Maybe he could be a tight end.
I thought it was a great point. I think Paul was right on top of it there. And since I've thought about it, I think he's absolutely right. I don't think it has to be a big wide receiver. I think a big receiving tight end would fit the bill perfectly.
Exactly. And the guy that I really like is, I think it was on the Mayock's draft board, which was Garrett Everett coming out of Southern Alabama. And I mean, he's 6'3", 227. He could maybe gain another 15, maybe 20 pounds. But as far as athleticism and height is concerned.
Well, he can catch.
He can catch.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And he's pretty fast as well, too. He's hard to bring down.
Agreed.
And so I think that's maybe a fourth or fifth rounder to look at. And,
hold on. I want to stop you right there for a second. You said fourth or fifth round for him. I just wanted to give you a heads up. And, again, this is really early in the process. I get it. But Daniel Jeremiah from NFL.com released his first mock draft. He had him going to the Giants in the first round. So I don't think he's going to be sitting there in round four or five.
Well, let me tell you real quickly about the tight end position. All you have to do is look at what the Green Bay Packers do at the tight end position. What offense is that Giants running?
And how great did Jared Cook look?
That's
and how
what
much
I'm
did
saying.
He change
and
their
remember,
offense?
Jared
right.
Cook was hurt early in the season.
Correct.
So that's the type, and I will tell you this for all you Giants fans, no. You go back a few years, okay? Boss and Ballard, they weren't as athletic as those guys, but they were big. 6'4", 6'5", and Eli loved them. Loved to throw to those guys. Yeah. And they could block and they could run. I think it's a missing component of this offense, whether it's the tight end or it's the fullback, whatever you want to choose. I think one of those has to kind of present itself in a way that it can help the offense on maybe first down, second down, whatever it is. We looked at all those numbers. They need help, and it's at the tight end position. John has just mentioned he can't block, but I don't think any of the tight ends that are on the Giants rosters in the last 3 years have been able to block. So we need to work on that a little bit.
Final point, Ty, then we got to run.
Yeah, final point. If the last caller was talking about you guys need or us needing a mauler type of guard on the inside, I want you guys to take a look at, once you get a chance, look at the guard, Kyle Kalis from Michigan.
Okay.
I think he's playing in the Senior Bowl this year. You take a look at him. I've looked at him all season. I'm a Michigan fan. He is a mauler type of guard that will fit perfectly in the Giants offense. So
I'll take a look at him
for a minute.
Perfect. Thank you, bud.
Have a good one. Thanks for calling.
Freddie in New Jersey. He wraps us up. Freddie, you're a cleanup hitter. What's up, pal?
Hey, Jeff. Hey, John. How you guys doing?
Doing well,
very good.
I just want to talk about another tight end that nobody's really talking about. Jeff's probably familiar with him. David Njoku out of the University of Miami.
A beast.
Oh, boy.
No,
here
listen.
Here we go.
Listen. And I know, all kidding aside, because it's the U, but I will tell you, this guy is a specimen.
Is he?
Yes, he is a big dude, and he is ripped.
Can he block?
Listen. Okay, but you know what, though? I think we have this conception about tight ends blocking.
Well,
I think those days are over
in the NFL
at that position.
Well, let me ask you this. Is he physically capable of becoming
a
better
blocker?
There's no question.
Right.
That is the better question to ask.
Okay. I agree with you there.
Yeah, he's 6'4", 250, and he's run a 4.4 at the combine.
Oh, Vernon Davis-esque right there, huh?
But I'm telling you, his brother's going to Miami too.
I would love it for the Giants to draft him.
His brother plays at Wayne Hills, and he's also going to Miami as a receiver.
Now, if we did an all Miami draft show, Fegels would be all over it.
Okay. All right. Now, okay. Speaking of Miami, I just have one more question. Yeah. Boss, another Miami guy. What do you guys think about maybe possibly drafting Brad Kaya in the later round and sitting behind Eli?
I like it. I like it. Of course I do. But I, you know, aside from the Miami guy, he's smart. Okay. I think his arm strength is a little bit that's going to hurt him.
Yeah.
But he's accurate. He's the one. I don't think that Brad Kaya is going to be a fourth or fifth rounder. He's going to be up there in second, third rounds.
Yeah, probably just late second, early third. I would think because prior to last year they had him going in the first round when he came out of junior year.
Right, right. I think that he
going into a junior. Excuse me.
Yeah, he had a down year, and I think it certainly hurt his status. But you know what? Maybe he can make it up at the combine.
I appreciate the call.
Also, all right, thanks, guys. I appreciate
okay,
the
thanks
call.
For the call. Sorry, we're
thank
up
you,
against
Fred.
The hour.
Sorry, we're really, really late here. Now Matt's gonna get mad at me, but I have to do this because we play this with Fegels every time.
Oh, that's right. We got even though it's Thursday,
now,
we're gonna play it.
It's okay though. Dominic gets very grumpy when he doesn't get lunch on time.
Oh, of
Matt's
course.
Much more amenable
more disciplined.
To being a couple minutes
He's
late.
He's more disciplined.
Much more disciplined and in better shape. I'll be honest. Yeah. All right, here we go.
It's all about Dom.
It's time for everyone's favorite game.
I like this.
Did he play with Jeff Fegels?
I don't have a great memory.
22 NFL seasons.
Wow.
Hundreds of players.
Fegels with the Eagles.
Let's see who Jeff remembers.
You can make a mockery of my memory.
Here's your host.
That was just so.
John.
Let me get a drink of water to get the brain cells going.
You went 1-1 the last 2 weeks. You're at 18-12. Not bad. And by the way, I brought this up last week. Look at this. It's almost the size of the football. It's like a gallon.
Could fit a gallon in here.
How much sugar you have in that thing, Fegels?
Water.
Oh, it's just water? Okay, that's
water
okay.
Water with lemons.
All right, here we go. Player number one, Jeff Fegels. Did you play with Eric Coleman? Eric Coleman.
The Eric Coleman that played for the Jets, Eric Coleman?
Did you play with a player named Eric Coleman?
No.
Yes, you did, Jeff Fegels. 1989 with the New England Patriots.
Oh, whenever Schmelk wants to get it to 500, he goes way back in the past. What did he play? I don't even know.
He was a defensive back. He had an interception that year. Played in 8 games. He was also with the Patriots in 1990. Wrong.
Seriously?
Player number two. Did you play with Roland James?
Yes. Another Patriot.
Correct.
There we go.
Good job.
There we go. Yeah, Roland.
Very good.
You lose. Yep. Good day, sir.
No, you're 1 out of 2.
You lose. I won the last
one. 1 out of 2.
It was 1 out of 2.
I had to stop.
Both of those guys. I don't remember Eric Coleman.
I need to get a you're right sound on. I don't even have one. I just have the you're wrong ones on there.
But wasn't there Eric Coleman for the Jets?
There was, and he's actually a broadcaster now. He actually does stuff on Sirius.
Okay, so that's good. All right,
but
so
Eric Coleman was a DB for your Patriots back in 1989.
8 games.
He had an interception.
Oh, yeah, obviously. I don't remember that one either.
No,
but
clearly.
That's okay. Roland James, I do remember, though.
He
nice guy.
He might have been a gunner, defensive back. He could have gunned.
First of all, I can't say he was or not because I don't even remember him. So I would be lying to you to say that, yeah, oh, yeah, definitely, you know. Anyway, it's a good show.
Eric Coleman was a tough one. Fun times, Weeks.
Thank you, brother.
So we'll see you next Friday. Yeah. Tomorrow it's me and Dottino. We'll have Tony Pauline from the NFL Combine. He'll be coming back. He lands around 11:30. We'll get him when he gets back home. So we'll have Tony Pauline talk about what he saw from the Senior Bowl and Senior Bowl, pardon me. And then, of course, we'll head on to free agency and other good stuff around the NFL, preview the Super Bowl next week as we get ready for Super Bowl 51. For Jeff Fegels, I'm John Schmelk. Thank you for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com. Have a great day, everybody.